Hello, and welcome to Ask an Atheist with me, your guest host, Mr. Jeremy Whitman. Our regular host, Mr. Sam Mulvey, is on assignment behind enemy lines fighting the war on Christmas here in the 2016. We're not exactly sure what he's up to, but he did send us back a severed foot that says on it in Sharpie, stocking stuffer, LOL. So,
oh dear.
He's being fairly productive. I have noticed Glenn Beck walking with a bit of a limp recently as well.
It's beginning to stink up the studio here.
Joining me today, I probably shouldn't be wearing that foot as a necklace. I agree. That's in poor taste. Joining me today is Miss Rebecca Friedman. Becky, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Jeremy.
And also Dave Brulette.
A glorious new year to
you. Oh, yeah. I hope everyone had a delightful Star Wars. Did you?
I love that movie.
Yeah.
It was very exciting. Lots of fun. Blasty things in space.
Mm-hmm.
It felt right.
It's almost a you can go home again feeling.
It so, is.
I have some news, some interesting news. It just started snowing as we started this recording.
Oh, fun.
So I am prepared to eat both of you if it comes to that.
I'm glad I drove the Subaru.
Well, you know, when it happens in the Pacific Northwest, you know, coastal Pacific Northwest, you get one little millimeter of snow and everything shuts down. So we'll see if, you know, school happens tomorrow, the apocalypse, either thing.
All right. We have some good news this week. Mm. Depending on how you define good news. I like this story. Hands down, my favorite fundamentalist felon and creationist convict, Kent Hovind, has managed to get back into the interwebs streams.
Now, did you say felon or villain?
Felon. I was going for an alliteration.
Ah, not a fellow villain, then.
No, not a fellow villain. No, not at all. Creationist evangelical Kent Hovind released a video stating that God purposely put contradictions in the Bible to weed out non-believers. The video, which was posted on YouTube, was responding to a question about a contradiction in the book of Acts. Hovind said that if he were God, he would write the Bible with things that would make people who didn't want to believe think that they had found reasons not to. Specifically, he said, I would put things in there that would appear without digging to be contradictions. Hovind finished by saying that he will choose to believe the Bible until it's proven wrong.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. This would be like me creating a test for my students and saying, oh, wait, no, we do that. We do put trick questions in tests.
Trick questions?
They got to dig a little bit, though.
This is beyond circular reasoning. This is Mobius strip reasoning in my book. And the interesting thing is if you watch this video, he just says that. So the guy asks him about a very specific contradiction of the book of Acts, and he simply says his little piece that he has to say about contradictions and never actually addresses the question.
Yeah.
Which is an interesting form of an answer. If I just run my gums long enough, I have somehow won.
Yeah, pretty much.
I think this might be similar to the idea that anything that's in the fossil record, anything that, you know, when you look at a cross section of mountain that has, you know, resulted from upthrust of the earth, of movement of the tectonic plates, you have strata, you can see different geologic time periods within the rocks, and people like Ken Hovind himself included, will say, oh, these were just things placed in the rock, all at the same time to fool you and test you.
Oh, Bill Hicks had a great bit about this where he says, like, he goes, I have just one question. If the Bible's true, why does it not mention dinosaurs? And he goes, I asked this to a Christian one time, and the guy's response was, God put those to test our faith, not our face.
Well, looking at your face right now, I can see that you passed that test, Jeremy.
Yeah. And he goes on to say, I don't know if I want to believe in a prankster God who is messing with me. Like, running around the world burying dinosaur bones just to find out who believes in him. This is a really weird standard of faith that you probably wouldn't get Kent Hovind to have that standard of faith unless he's faced with this question, because his whole career is built on the opposite idea that everything actually does line up with the global flood. Yeah. And it can explain everything.
Well, there are so many examples that you can look at in the real world and in the Bible as contradictions. Like, in the real world, if you think, you know, there are galaxies that are millions of light years away, which we know light, the speed of light is a constant. And so if God created the universe 6,000 years ago, that means he created most of the light in the universe almost to Earth.
So God created light that was traveling at that specific speed just to trick you, and yeah, all just, those physicists.
Yeah, yeah. Hey,
God's vision, apparently, according to Kent Hovind, is a heaven of the incredibly gullible. It's God's perfect world is Amway's perfect world as well.
Oh, dear. I think that believing in a prankster God or believing in a trickster God is something that's quite common to a lot of non-Christian cultures and faiths out there. I mean, we have the raven, we have coyote in our own North American, mythology, and we have Anansi, the Spider-Man, in different parts of Africa. So it's not completely out of the realm of possibility for cultures to develop prankster and trickster deities, just none so powerful as
typically
the...
as an a polytheist,
more of a sideshow god than the man in charge.
And
the
mostly...
Marvel Cinematic Universe has one of those.
Oh man, are they just, is Captain America's shield just there to trick us? Is the Iron Man's, are all of those things just there to make us believe a certain way? And
listen, if it hurts your brain to think about it, you're thinking too hard. Go back to churning butter or whatever it is that you do.
I believe that Captain America's shield and Tony Stark's suit is there to show us that Marvel knows how to make a movie and DC doesn't.
Oh, they keep trying, though.
They do.
So the prankster god is really the kind that you prefer, Jeremy, right?
Mm-hmm. I prefer to be left to my own devices.
Uh-huh. I just love the without digging, there would appear to be contradictions without digging. I think my favorite contradiction in the Bible is the four-legged swarming creatures, the four-legged insects.
There are four-legged? This is one I have not heard.
Does that contradict another verse in the Bible or just reality as a whole?
Just reality.
Oh.
I also like that the bat is a bird.
Rabbits chew cud.
Yes, rabbits chew cud. That's an awesome one. Or how about the two varying and conflicting creation stories in Genesis itself?
Right out the gate.
One of my favorites for contradictions that you can throw out, particularly for like people who like to pretend that the Old Testament doesn't exist, is you could just say, okay, what was Jesus's last words? Because I believe there are four accounts of Jesus' death, three different last words, and one silence.
What are... Oh, really? Father, Father, why have you forsaken me?
Forgive them, Father, for they know not what they do.
I'll be back.
That one. Tonight you shall sit at the right hand of my Father, I think is one of them.
You guys are all in territory unfamiliar to me. I'm the one that grew up pluralistic Jewish, so...
we'll bring it back into your sphere now, since we're talking about Kent Hovind on YouTube. We also have another story. A YouTuber rabbi claims that only 1 million Jews perished in the Holocaust.
This is something that you typically hear from Holocaust deniers, from folks that generally have an anti-Semitic bent, that say things like, well, the Holocaust wasn't that big a deal. In fact, it wasn't a Holocaust at all. It was merely a war. It was merely a political conflict, and the numbers of people that perished are completely overinflated. So to see that a rabbi is claiming that only 1 million, where the accepted figure is generally around 6 million Jews perished in the Holocaust, is... at first glance, a little bit disconcerting.
And upon a further investigation, still disconcerting, just for different reasons, I believe, than you would. So what's the motivation here? This guy is ultra-Orthodox. Can you kind of break that down for us briefly, Becky, what that means?
So ultra-Orthodox are Jewish folks that believe very, very sincerely in the Bible. They believe in a Messiah that will come, in a literal Messiah, and they believe that in order to be a good and authentic Jew, you must abide by as many of the commandments as possible. There's a tremendous rigidity in terms of modesty, in terms of family structure, in terms of purpose, and in terms of study. I mean, close exegesis of biblical text and commentary is a way of life. So you have this particular rabbi, Rabbi Yosef Mizrahi, who has embraced one aspect of modern society, and that is having a YouTube channel.
Oh, yeah? Is that kind of against? Well, he probably doesn't broadcast on Saturdays?
I would imagine not, since that would be the Sabbath. So that's an example of one of the rigid rules that one must obey. But to have him basically say that only 1 million Jews perished is predicated upon his close reading of what it means to be a Jew per religious law. So what he's arguing here is that there was a high assimilation rate amongst Jews in Europe before World War II, and so he postulates that 80% of the Jews that were killed were not authentically Jewish per religious law, and he explained his reasoning by noting that anyone that is not born of a Jewish mother is forbidden from marrying a Jewish woman, and according to the religious law, any of descendants of such a union wouldn't be considered Jewish.
Oh, so he's not actually contesting the number of people killed, he's just the demographics of
right.
He's basically using the logical fallacy known as no true Scotsman to say, no, all those people that died that the Nazis claimed were Jews weren't real Jews. No true Jew would have descended from a non-Jewish mother.
What would a person have to gain by this aside from expressing a theory to show how rigid they were and inciting drama on the internets?
I feel like there's definitely an undertone in this of the people who died who weren't Jews don't count as much.
It does feel like that to me as well. I don't know why exactly.
Yeah, he never explicitly states that, and he does try and point
you
out.
You wouldn't.
Yeah.
No matter almost who you were.
Yeah, that would be a really bad step. But
the people
I feel
who
like
would hold a sentiment similar to that would actually go the other way with it and go, the people who weren't Jewish who died count more.
But yeah, I think one of the things he's trying to say is that, like, it's not as bad as you think. Like, I think that's kind of an idea he was trying to get to.
So what I grew up with as a relatively integrated, assimilated modern Jew, but active in congregational life, youth group, Hebrew school, and things like that, one of the things that I got as a kid was it has taken up to the mid-90s to replace the Jewish population worldwide that had perished during the Holocaust. And so what was drilled into my head was, it took us 30 years or 40 years to get past this, to replace the Jewish population that had been lost. And linked to that was an utter terror related to the watering down of Jewish culture, practice, and continuity. Mm-hmm. Even amongst the relatively liberal denominations of Judaism, I, growing up, very much felt a focus on Jewish continuity as paramount. And one of the best ways to ensure Jewish continuity is that only that Jews marry other Jews and that you raise your children in congregational life, that you send your kids on an Israel trip when they're, you know, somewhere between 16 and 24. And I started along that path. For folks that were very welcoming of intermarried families into congregational life, I experienced when I first started dating Sam, who, as our listeners probably know, Sam Mulvey, not Jewish.
In any sense of the word.
No,
he did
not
go to classes
at all
to be able to marry you or anything like that.
It was met with a surprising amount of resistance, even amongst the liberal congregations and families that I encountered. And it was unnerving, having grown up in congregations that were generally welcoming of intermarried families, to say, well, I guess that those folks are already lost, but you're not lost yet. So I was met with this discomfort at best, mm-hmm. And hostility at worst.
Open hostility?
Yes, yeah. in some circles. So I'm glad that you two, as relative outsiders, also feel that this is, in a sense, saying you don't really count if your parents were not Jewish or your mother was not Jewish and you descended from a not, you know, legal Jewish line, is saying that we discount you as authentic Jews. I'm glad that you're getting the same kind of icky feeling that I got.
Yeah, this is uncomfortable reading.
I'm uncomfortable even having Becky explain Judaism to me because I haven't checked her Jew card. Was your mother Jewish or are you unqualified to speak on? Show me the card.
Interestingly enough, my mother actually experienced an Orthodox conversion, had no intention of becoming a practicing Orthodox Jew, but studied before my birth and studied and received a conversion incur all of the religious laws. You enter into the mikveh, which is a ritual bath. You are inspected by religious women to look at, you know, your cleanliness. You are interviewed.
Excuse me?
Absolutely. Your look of
incredulity. Checking for tattoos there also?
Your look of incredulity is completely warranted. They inspect the fingernails. You are immersed in water, and you're not in a big fancy nightgown like you see in joyful baptisms on YouTube. You're in the women's section of the ritual bath, and you do that, and then after you're done with that, you go and you're inspected by the rabbi. You're interviewed by the rabbi, who asks any number of questions.
Is he flipping through the report of the inspection as this is going on, and you're driving a car as well and have to parallel park?
Something like that. But it's she went through an Orthodox conversion because in Jewish law, it's by matriarchal descent. And she and my father wanted no question as to whether I would be considered Jewish. Per Jewish law, it would have been good enough for the, you know, reform and conservative movements and general secular Jews. But she knew that at some point it wouldn't be good enough if I, say, wanted to immigrate to Israel. Authenticity might be called into question. And so that was one of the things that she did prior to having children.
Wow, it's kind of scary when temple garments is the more comfortable option.
I've always found. I have a friend who was raised Mormon and is married to a Jewish woman, and I always thought it's interesting that both of them are Gentiles to each other.
Indeed.
All right, we got a question from Tony in Detroit, who it's a very simple question, but I think could be very interesting. It is simply, does everything happen for a reason?
Nope, moving on.
Well, I guess so, but the reason doesn't have to be meaningful.
I actually quite enjoy flipping this on its head and going, no, nothing happens for a reason. Things happen because of reasons.
I think you're onto something there,
yeah.
Jeremy.
Okay.
We don't know that first reason, but I'm pretty sure it didn't invent the universe with light flying out of galaxies already for us to see.
Well, if you can't prove that first reason wasn't that, then it therefore has to be, right?
Absolutely.
Like, that's
show
how,
over
that's,
forever.
That's how the logic works, right? Mm-hmm.
You've lost me in a sea of contradictions that were placed there to begin with to test my faith.
Yeah, I think we live in a causal universe. I watched The Matrix 2 last night.
That'll ruin your faith. I mean, that'll really interrupt. Now, I've never understood this whole everything happens for a reason thought. Like, I find that so frustrating because it's like, well, if you believe that, then you got to believe that, like, things like the Holocaust happened for a reason. Like,
it does indicate a very strange manic plan by the logic exercised in the Bible is just bizarre to me that anyone would want to hitch their wagon to this pony. I mean, the idea that God created people flawed enough that he would have to send most of them to hell by his own rule book, and his solution to that was to knock up a married woman, nearly destroy her marriage, and then have his own son be sacrificed to himself so that he could open the door to heaven to let in all the non-Jews. That is the reasoning of a schizophrenic on bath salts. That is absolutely insane and terrifying to me. No, things happen because other things already happened before them, and everything is moving forward in space-time. That would be my thought. I don't quite understand the succinctness of this question, but I think that's a fairly safe position to take unless someone shows up and shoots lightning out of their hands and go, okay, maybe something else is going on here.
So maybe we should start praying to submolecular particles?
No, I didn't get that from that discussion,
yeah,
Dave.
Yeah, don't extrapolate that from what I said.
Don't go digging, Dave. You know, I think that the phrase, this all happens for a reason, or everything happens for a reason, is often used as a way to comfort people that are going through tragedy. How often do you see someone accomplishing something great and me saying in response, or someone saying in response, you know what? You really earned that degree. You're the first in your family to graduate from college. All of this happens for a reason. It's most often said as a way to try and comfort someone facing tragedy and facing
something
heartbreak.
Something terrible happens, yeah.
And I think that it speaks more to, I feel so helpless in the face of your tragedy that I don't know what to say. Mm. And groups like Grief Beyond Belief have actually come a long way to, I think, propel the discourse into saying, you know what, having empathy isn't talking about that all of this happens for a reason, or that you're being tested by God. A really good thing to just say is, I'm so sorry. I am so sorry that this happened. Mm-hmm. And what can I do? And what do you need? That's the kind of discourse that's being propelled by folks that are looking beyond religious strictures and structures to try and comfort people. You don't have to attribute everything to the contradictions that everything must happen for a reason.
Yeah. No, and there's also a component of being an adherent to a monotheistic faith, which puts you in a position not at the center of the universe, but right next to the guy who is at the center of the universe. It's, you know, to think everything happens for a reason and it's so that you could get your college degree or something, because let's say someone really believes in a flawed way to where their dad gets run over by a truck and they get a windfall of money and now can afford to go to Harvard for free. And they go, I guess that's part of God's plan. That is an amazingly conceited position, yeah, in my opinion, for someone to take.
Yeah, God really likes me a lot.
Yeah, that's true, Dave. God called me and said that. Oh, and on that note, we are going to go to our first break, and we'll be back after these brief messages.
Billy! Billy, I am a Nigerian prince, and I want to hide a bajillion dollars in your locker.
Wow, a bajillion dollars?
All I need is your lunch money.
What a great deal. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Just because you want to believe something doesn't mean you should. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled, week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Actions and volunteers accepted. Devil is not real.
48 hours. 24 hours. 10 minutes to go.
And yes, it appears as though the governor is getting out now. It's hard to see. My God, the rain is coming down in sheets. I've never seen anything like this. There must be tens of thousands of people out here right now. The streets are shut down. Okay, it appears the governor is making his way toward the convention center. No one knows what he's going to say. The crowd is pushing forward through the storm. The Secret Service is struggling to hold them back. A wave of people are rushing toward the candidate, my God!
0. For your consideration, we present Convention and its subject, the nominee, ANNEX Radio.com. Now on iTunes and Stitcher.
Secular humanism is a non-theistic view of the universe built on a foundation of reason, science, and democracy. Humanists support intellectual freedom and critical thinking, and we hold that human beings are autonomous centers of moral development. The Humanists of Washington is the oldest humanist organization in the state and offers a community of free thinkers who educate the public and celebrate life. For information on how you can be a part of the humanist activities in the Puget Sound area, become a member of the Humanists of Washington today. Visit humanistsofwashington.org.
At Puget Sound Celebrant Service, we want to be your secular wedding officiant. We are committed to serving the Puget Sound region and work to ensure your special day is all about you. Robert, a certified humanist celebrant with the Humanist Society, specializes in secular weddings and customizes ceremonies to fit your needs. To commemorate your special day, each couple married by Robert will receive a one-year membership to the American Humanist Association. Find out more at PugetSoundCelebrant.com.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding Pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the Third Thursday Meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at SeattleAtheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
All right, welcome back to Ask an Atheist. I am your guest host, Jeremy Whitman. Sam Mulvey is on assignment, gearing up for the war on Easter. And Dave Brulette is with me today, as well as Rebecca Friedman. Dave, you had an announcement you wanted to go over.
Yeah, we always we wanted to let you know that you can always find episodes of Ask an Atheist at our website, askanatheist.tv. But if you're listening to us on the radio, please do give us a call or an email. Let us know. We don't often know how many of our listeners are with us live or hearing it on podcasts, and we'd really appreciate it.
Yeah, don't be subject to the bystander effect of this. If you are driving your car right now and listening to us on the radio, send us an email as you're driving. No, wait, don't do that. Don't do that. Pull over first.
Wait till you're come to a complete stop and then give us a call at 844-SKEPTIC. That is our phone number. It is toll-free.
844-753-7842, 844-SKEPTIC. Do that.
And just to be clear, the producers of Ask an Atheist do not encourage you to email while driving in your car.
That is correct. And don't get in a huge argument with Siri while driving in your car, which I do oftentimes as I try and be safe, because Siri now wants to do iTunes streaming radio at me as opposed to iTunes my music that I picked for myself years ago, and I only need basically rap from about 98 to 96. That's all I need, Siri. Nothing else.
I love how you work backwards in time. Mm-hmm. Time's just fluid for you.
Yeah. It's, yeah. It's a Kurt Vonnegut thing. You wouldn't understand.
Oh, man.
Oh, so Bangladesh has been in the news quite a bit lately in our world. What's going on there, guys?
Yeah, the last 2 years have been a kind of crummy place to be a secular activist and a secular writer in Bangladesh. So we have periodically been talking about the plight of these authors and writers. We've had attacks, we've had assassinations, and they're horrible. I mean, Dave, you as our main writer have been scouring the news, you know, weekly. And this seems to come up a lot.
Yeah, it's there were 5 different writers, bloggers, and
publishers,
publishers who were attacked by groups of men with machetes and brutally murdered. Like, this is,
and that's just in 2015.
Yeah, that's just over the last year, and it's disturbing stuff.
So we have an update on one of the older cases, and that's that 2 people have been sentenced to death for the murder of an atheist writer in Bangladesh. The students, their names are being withheld, but they were convicted of killing Ahmed Rajib Haider in 2013. So 6 others were also convicted and given lesser sentences. The leader of the group claiming responsibility, the Ansarullah Bangla team, was sentenced to 5 years in prison. Bangladeshi authorities have been widely criticized for failing to respond sufficiently to a series of brutal murders of atheists and freethinking writers and publishers over the past year. This, though, is more than just the past year. This goes back to 2013.
Yeah. This is this Ansarullah Bangla team. They claim to be an outfit of Al-Qaeda, although I'm not sure Al-Qaeda claims them, but they have a list of Bangladeshi writers who it's a hit list. It's people they want dead. And they've been working their way through this list for years now.
So you'd think that with something like that, I mean, if there's evidence of a hit list, and if there's evidence of a pattern of brutal assassinations, that anyone who is on the list or anyone who fits the profile of someone who has been targeted in the past would easily be granted flight from the country and refuge somewhere else, right?
You would hope so.
That hasn't been the case, though.
No, that unfortunately hasn't.
So there actually is a humanitarian group that has written an open letter asking Secretary of State John Kerry to help save the lives of the atheist writers and bloggers in Bangladesh. PEN America, a group dedicated to freedom of speech and expression, wrote the letter asking Kerry to extend humanitarian parole to Bangladeshi writers and publishers who are being threatened by Islamic extremists. The letter states that the bloggers qualify for the rare form of asylum, which in extreme cases circumvents the normal admission process to the U.S. PEN America asks that the U.S. government seek the help of other nations to take in some of the writers that would otherwise be left in Bangladesh.
What's been the, has there been a response to this? You think, this would seem to me to be a slam dunk. People targeted by terrorist groups, which are basically explicitly our enemy, even if they're not Al-Qaeda or even under Al-Qaeda's corporate umbrella, they're not part of the Al-Qaeda conglomerate. You know, they've had some breakoff groups.
They're a franchise.
Yeah, they've some rebranding and some different stuff. Even if they're not that, they're obviously a part of our, you know, I don't like the phrase, but war on terror. They should be on, this group should be on our enemies list. People hiding from them, wanting to exercise a basic American freedom, which is freedom of thought,
freedom of expression
without having to worry about being attacked, you would think it'd be pretty much a slam dunk. What's the response been from Kerry or the American government at all?
As far as I could find, there hasn't been a response yet. They haven't been talking about, like, this letter was sent, and I feel like this letter is very clear. Like, there are people in danger. we can help. There's no reason not to help. But I'm not sure why the U.S. government hasn't responded at all.
I don't want to speak for Kerry or the U.S. government in this instance, but I feel it might be a political football. Someone might feel that it's a bad idea to give asylum to humanists or atheists or free thinkers. If they were Christians, they'd be over the border right now, I feel like.
I'm not so sure of that in particular, because we do have on record instances of people of Christians in Pakistan and in China who are being threatened and persecuted, maybe not being hacked to death by machetes. But in Pakistan, we've seen the blasphemy laws used against non-Muslims to basically settle interpersonal grudges and disputes,
right.
Ways that aren't even aligned with blasphemy, and certainly infringe upon freedom of expression, freedom of thought. And we haven't seen the U.S. bending over backwards to evacuate all Christians from Pakistan.
Mm.
I'm wondering if it's not so much that as it is an American aversion to granting asylum to people that look and sound different from us, people that have hard to pronounce names, people that don't look typically American, even if they are doing, as we said, exercising one of the very American ideals, which is publishing your thoughts. I mean, these are people that are being hacked to death for doing what we are doing right now into a microphone, except they're doing it into a computer website. I mean, it's there's no difference except for where we are at.
I'm not sure I can follow that. I'm not sure that I can agree that that is a likely reason why the U.S. government is unwilling to act. I feel it's probably much more, you know, a little bit more practical and cynical. It probably has to do with, because I feel the Bangladeshi government has made it clear their stance on this.
The Ansarullah Bangla team is a forbidden group. I mean, it is a terrorist group labeled by their own government as something that is not allowed to be in existence.
And they have captured and prosecuted some of them, right?
Well,
that was part of the story.
In the first story that we read, this story actually shocked me that they sentenced two people to death, which I'm not entirely sure about the death penalty, but that's their laws. I'm not going to really get into that discussion. But and then six other people were also convicted. I put in the story because it's definitely an outlier on what's happened before. I mean, yeah, the organization is banned, but the government seems to be looking for him the same way that Commissioner Gordon was looking for Batman in The Dark Knight. It's like, yep, haven't found him yet. You know, you see him over there? Nope, they're not there. Okay, nothing we can do. And they kind of act like their hands are tied. And they went as far as to say, like, you know, there are five men in the same sort of occupation as bloggers and writers who were all killed by groups of men in the exact same way. And the government said, we can't find any connection between these murders. We aren't willing to say that it's a single group behind this. I mean, they have consistently said they're not interested in prosecuting. One of the people was attacked. I wish I had his name in front of me. I don't. But one guy was attacked and survived, and he got put in prison for under blasphemy law. Like, the victims are being thrown into jail, and so I'm shocked that any of the attackers have been convicted. So I think it's more of a question, our government isn't willing to step into this sort of quagmire that is the Bangladeshi government, who wants to be on the extremist Muslim side, but aren't willing to go quite that far to just openly support them.
I'm going to go out on a bit of a limb here and say that it might actually politically set a bad precedent for our government to do this, because our government consistently turns a blind eye to Saudi Arabia.
It's true.
Executing people for expressing thoughts within the border of Saudi Arabia, and Saudi Arabia is a valuable trade partner, and it might just be too politically hot. I think what I'm coming to out of this discussion is a little column A, a little column B. Definitely, I think race does play a factor here.
I can't help but note the names of those who have perished are Abhijit Roy, Washika Raman, Ananta Das, Niloy Neal, Faisal Deepan. And those names don't sound typically American, as people would say, we welcome you into the sweet embrace of our country, where freedom of thought and expression is welcome. And in the midst of very, very popular very popular political discourse that says we want to, eliminate the possibility of Muslims coming into our country at all. We want to stop the immigrants coming from our southern borders. When we have a general political discourse perpetuated by none other than candidate Trump that is targeting people from outside of our country, I can't help but that. But see that that may play a factor.
How much coverage has this been getting in the mainstream press? How hard did we have to dig to find? This seems like a fairly major story.
It's really starting to pick up. Some of these stories came from, like, Time Magazine. New York Times is covering this story. So it's really starting to pick up. In fact, I believe the New York Times did a big, long expose recently on what's going on here. But these are more recent developments. Like I said, like we said, this is a story that's been happening for a couple of years. And before, I want to say the last 2 months or so, I've had to dig pretty deep to find these stories. I'd have to go to foreign websites. And Al Jazeera was pretty good about covering this, but they're pretty good at covering any Islam nation, you know, based nations. So
we have seen, actually, Center for Inquiry, which is based out of United States, you know, New York, but also Center for Inquiry Transnational, was able to extract, basically, at least one secular blogger who, I think, for the time being, had been staying in Canada. And we do have an update that two atheist writers from Bangladesh have been granted asylum in Canada. Mm-hmm. So this is, I think, what this humanitarian group, what PEN America is looking at, is saying, look, we have, amongst not just the United States, but amongst our allied nations, the ability to relocate people that are definitely targets of this pattern. So as far as Canada, it's Raihan Abir and Samia Hussein. They're a married couple from the Bangladeshi capital of Dhaka who feared for their lives after a number of atheist bloggers, you know, as we know, have been killed. He wrote for the free-thinking website Mukto Mona and was friends with a number of the victims. And the couple, who were pregnant with their first child, they arranged visas to visit Canada and then applied for asylum once they reached Toronto. And they were helped by Center for Inquiry in Canada. And I think that if we have it, one, it shows the great importance of groups to put positive pressure on governments to be able to do this. Two, it also shows that these governments do have the capability of doing this.
Right. And I think it's most importantly what you're saying is that these groups putting pressure on the governments may lead to maybe some back end pressure from our governments to their governments may have led directly to the fact that now we have convictions. Like, I can't say that's pure speculation on my part, but
we can't pretend to be Aaron Sorkin writing the West Wing here, but I'm with you there.
I could imagine that, like, all three of these stories are great because it's a sign that there is public pressure and it's starting to have an effect. And here are two lives that are now safe, and actually three.
In which, happily,
if I read correctly, they have.
Are
a
all
daughter.
These people that have been she granted asylum? Are they by Canada? Are they in Canada presently?
Yes.
Have they made
yes.
it to Canada?
They are
and
in Toronto.
My other question about this story would be: are there other human rights groups involved in this besides one? Is Human Rights Watch on this? Is Amnesty International? Can we put pressure on those groups as well?
I haven't heard anything from Amnesty International. I can't say anything about Human Rights Watch. PEN America and Center for Inquiry seem to be the leaders in this push right now.
Yeah. So it would behoove us to perhaps put some pressure on other groups to make this a more public cause.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, with the better media coverage, the more the story gets out, you're probably going to see more some of the bigger names in the international world sort of step up in this.
I will say the undersigners of this particular letter to Secretary of State Kerry included PEN America Center, Human Rights Watch, Freedom House, Center for Inquiry, Reporters Without Borders, Human Rights First, and City of Asylum Pittsburgh, and the International Freedom to Publish Committee Association of American Publishers.
Okay, so there is Human Rights Watch.
So it's when you look at all the different interests here, we have Pittsburgh that is saying we would like to be an asylum city, which has come under pressure, as we saw in San Francisco, which is an asylum city, that when you grant asylum to folks in your city, when you say you will not be persecuted, then you do run the risk of having people come in that are violent offenders or who may commit a violent offense, as in the case of San Francisco. But you have cities that are dedicated to this. You have publishing organizations that are dedicated to this. You have humanists and humanist societies that are dedicated to this. And I think the coming together of all these different organizations can only be a good thing in this case.
And we should take a moment to mention there's probably Christians and Muslims dedicated to this also.
Yes, definitely. And I think it's key to remember that this is a group of people whose lives are in such dire straits that Pittsburgh is a better option.
Oh, man. We're going to get some email hate mail from that. Dave, oh, you walked us right into that, Quagmire.
Wow. It's a good thing you didn't say Philadelphia. They might show up and beat us up. We're incurring a lot of hate mail here in the last couple minutes.
I needed a little levity. That's such a heavy topic that I've been covering. I've been reading about this for so long.
We do have about a minute and a half before we come up on our next break. Becky, would you like to take a moment and explain what an asylum city is for those who... It's not a city full of crazy people, is it?
No, we're not talking Arkham Asylum here. Back to our Batman reference. There are cities across the U.S. that have decided that the local authorities are going to be in the business only of enforcing local laws and not necessarily working with ICE at the federal level to say, look, if you're arrested for a local offense, we're not going to be turning you over. We're not going to be a papers, please, a city. You know, present your documentation and throw you into detention or hand you over to privately run detention facilities at a federal level. It would appear that Pittsburgh is one of them. San Francisco is another. Mm-hmm. Seattle locally decided, I think in 2014, that they at the municipal level will not be working with ICE.
Unless they find someone who doesn't have a kitchen compost, then they kick you out of the country.
Or maybe shopped with a plastic bag. I'm not sure.
Okay, thanks for clearing that up. I was kind of thinking maybe it was if you have asylum, you get to pick from Pittsburgh or San Francisco. I was like, that's not fair. All right, we're going to go to break. We'll be back in just a few moments with more of Ask an Atheist with me, Jeremy Whitman, and Rebecca Friedman, and Dave Brulette.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
Billy, I'm a certified ghost expert.
Wow, incredible.
Billy, your great-great-grandmother says she loves you and to give me your lunch money.
Aw, anything, family. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled, week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Chins and volunteers accepted. Devil is not real.
I know.
If you are a humanist, atheist, or freethinker from Everett, Washington to the Canadian border, Humanists of North Puget Sound welcomes you. Your freethought neighbors to the north have been promoting secular ideas for over 20 years. They're humanists, with a rational worldview informed by science, inspired by art, and motivated by compassion. Join up for monthly conversation, camaraderie, and activism. Humanists of North Puget Sound. Visit humanistsnps.org.
The Humanists of Washington is the oldest humanist organization in the state and offers a community of freethinkers who educate the public and celebrate life. Come celebrate life with us. Humanists support intellectual freedom and critical thinking and hold that human beings are autonomous centers of moral development. You can become a member of the Humanists of Washington at humanistsofwashington.org. You'll get our quarterly publication, The Secular Humanist Press. Check out meetup.com where you can be part of our monthly Seattle dinner and our Heathens Do It Better breakfast. Humanists of Washington.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding Pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the Third Thursday Meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at seattleatheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
Ask an Atheist may have gone on the road, but we're not making big bucks.
We still need to keep the lights on, and 95% of our costs are for airtime alone.
That's why we need your contributions.
If you've got something to advertise, consider Ask an Atheist in your ad budget.
Our listener Peggy said it best. Step up and contribute to keep secular voices on the air. For $5, you could have a latte or a moment of science.
Take on Peggy's challenge and contribute today.
For details, go to askanatheist.tv or contribute directly via PayPal to paypal@askanatheist.tv.
All right. Welcome back to Ask an Atheist with me, your guest host, Jeremy Whitman. Sam Mulvey is on assignment door knocking Mormons and Jehovah's Witnesses and enjoining them to join the secular humanist movement. So we'll see how that goes for him. He should be back in a couple weeks with something to report on that. Joining
that's,
me
that's
today.
Deep cover he's there.
What's that?
That's deep cover he's got there.
Yeah. So, what do we have on our table right now? We have some responders to Peggy's challenge, do we not?
Yes, we do. We have Donald from Austin, Texas, and Dan from Boise, Idaho, who writes, I was driving and saw an SUV with a paranormal investigator sticker on it. Immediately, Billy popped into my head saying, wow, that's so credible. And I couldn't stop laughing. Thanks for all that you do and keep up the good work.
Ah.
Well, thank you, Dan.
Thank you so much, Dan and Don, right?
Yes.
I hope this sets a trend of getting emails with the responses to Peggy's challenge. The interesting, what triggered your response?
Yeah, let us know.
Peggy's challenge is the challenge that Peggy, a listener from Kent, posed to our listeners to help keep Ask an Atheist in production. You can go to askanatheist.tv and click on the contribute page button, and it'll take you to our PayPal page. And all of the money that is collected there goes to assist in our show production. You know, the Billy ads have been a hallmark of Ask an Atheist for a while, yeah. Advertising Camp Quest Northwest.
Yes, they've been a hit.
So we've gotten fans doing flash animations to them and
oh, really?
All sorts of stuff, yeah. They are pretty creative. They, of course, do advertise Camp Quest Northwest, something that both Sam and I have been affiliated with in its existence over the last 5 years. Your spouse, Carol,
yes, Carol.
Has also been involved. This year, Camp Quest Northwest opened its registration on January 1st and was filled to capacity within 6 hours with a wait list that's about 27 deep.
Cool. Yeah, that's like getting a Dell tickets.
I think Camp Quest Northwest may outstrip the demand that Dell tickets have. But what it really shows there is that amongst, even in one of the least churched places of our country, which would be the Pacific Northwest, there's still a demand for a summer camp experience for children that is free of religion and an overnight camp experience that is specifically built on humanist values. It also calls for that it's an all-volunteer run organization, and when the demand is so big like that, the reason that there's a wait list that's tens of kids deep is because there's not enough volunteer capacity to be able to host that many, campers in a session. And so,
So if you're listening to this and you're not volunteering for Camp Quest, you are shattering 27 or so children's dreams right now.
Right.
Why do you not love the children? Mm.
And
I feel like we should play a Whitney Houston song here.
Not an Adele song? So, hello out there. All of the listeners, you can contribute. There are, of course, other Camp Quest affiliates around the country, and there's new ones being started up all the time. But for listeners in the Northwest and for out of the Northwest, it's a pretty fun place to be and to volunteer.
Nice. So, Dave, what does a 40-foot tall granite cross, what does that mean to you typically?
Oh, that usually would be some indication of religious
that the town
beliefs.
Has had lots of problems with vampires. Right? Let's get into this. We have a story here. Would you like to bring us into this story?
Yeah. Okay. So the American Humanist Association has filed an appeal on the ruling of a cross-shaped war memorial
does not promote Christianity.
Yeah. Apparently a judge believes that a 40-foot granite cross is not a government endorsement of
everyone
religion.
Knows it's only religious iconography after 60 feet.
So this is in Bladensburg, Maryland, right?
Yeah, it's the cross. It's called the Bladensburg Cross in Bladensburg, Maryland, and it was built and is maintained by the state of Maryland. The AHA sued the state on behalf of three locals, calling the cross an unconstitutional endorsement of religion by the state. In 2014, a Maryland federal judge ruled the cross was not an endorsement of Christianity because of the inclusion of the American Legion seal and words such as valor, endurance, courage, and devotion on the monument. And so the AHA has filed an appeal with the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals.
So here's the thing. We have rulings that say that things like crosses have been accepted into a modern society and secularized to the point that it merely indicates a grave or a memorial to those who have perished. So that's sort of standing ruling in our case law and in tradition. But we have those laws that are being used by evangelical, dominionist Christians to say this is proof that America is a Christian nation. This is proof that Christianity reigns supreme. This is proof that the state does endorse our religion and favor it over others. You can't have it both ways. Yeah. You can't say in God we trust on every single government vehicle and in every single courtroom.
Listen up, okay? The fact that there is no consistency in their argument just makes me believe they're right all the more. That's what Kent Hovind taught us at the top of the episode.
See, if you...
Things that are wrong are therefore right.
If you believe they're
incons- I think we're off base with the it's been secularized to the point if my father was of a different faith or no faith and had been killed in combat, I wouldn't want him memorialized with the generic cross of the Christians. You know what I mean? Like, Muslims die for this country, Buddhists die for this country, people of no faith die for this country.
And so why is a cross a symbol of just general death or memorialization? It shouldn't be. It's clearly something that comes from the Christian tradition.
Mm-hmm. And it's a symbol of a very brutal style of death, too, that I hope none of our soldiers are having to face.
This is true.
I like that the inclusion of the words valor and an American Legion seal is the thing that says, oh, no longer Christian. Does that mean that I can have a six-pointed star and saying this has nothing to do with Judaism whatsoever because I put the National Endowment of the Arts sticker on it? I mean, what's going on here?
And it's not like we're at a lack for designs for memorials that would be secular in nature, like Marines raising a flag or... I don't know, Old Glory, our flag.
Well, more importantly, can I get a stamp of the American Legion seal and go around to churches and stamp it on their crosses and say, you are no longer Christian, now you have to pay taxes?
Yeah, you lost your tax-exempt status.
I think that's
vandalism.
Yes. Please do not enter private property and do such things,
the
Dave.
The producers of Ask an Atheist do not promote vandalism against churches.
Man, we've had to give a lot of disclaimers.
Mm-hmm. This last month has been a lot of don't use violence or vandalism.
I just imagine, you know, a four-story tall granite cross by the state, and a judge decides that's not Christianity. I'm like, can a judge make a decision so bad that when it's overturned, the higher court says, not only are we going to overturn your ruling, but we're just going to take this gavel from you too?
I do not believe that's the case. I'm not a lawyer.
I think really what we need to be focusing on here is not the mere symbols of a cross or the word God in terms of in God we trust. I think the things that we need to be focusing on is the intent of the people that use these things that have been ruled for general purpose or ceremonial, and prove that these are no longer ceremonial to people that are upholding them as symbols of Christianity.
Right.
I mean, it's clear in terms of, friend of the show, Robert Ray, he's been on several times. He's now the administrator of the Original Motto Project that looks to reestablish E Pluribus Unum as the motto and replace the In God We Trust. When you see the numbers of people that are using these symbols and these mottos, it's shocking to see that they even argue that these are not religiously based arguments.
Yeah, and here's a crazy idea. If you want to have some religious iconography to remember your family member who was religious, buy it and put it above their grave.
Yes.
Don't have the taxpayers fund this exclusionary monument. I'd love for an intrepid listener to go through and find out how much money America wastes every year on cases like this that ultimately fail. I'll bet you it's staggering.
Oh, yes.
I think I do like the idea of the cutoff, though, of what height. So the 60-foot cross is mm-hmm. religious, but the 40-foot cross isn't. Is it the height of it? Is it the stickers that are on it?
The problem is that the Bible prescribes two different heights, which only makes me believe in God more.
Oh, man.
All right. We have just enough time to get to one more email. This is Keith from the UK who writes, "A lady I know has a son who is rather troublesome but found Jesus and has reformed. She thinks this is a good thing. How, as an atheist, can I make any comments to her that they are deluded?"
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Keith, really? That's where you want to go? He was having troubles. I don't know what troublesome means. In this case, was maybe he was using drugs. Maybe
was he robbing convenience stores, or did he spray paint an overpass, or was
maybe
were
he
people
stuck a
just
sticker
disappearing
on a cross
if they got into his vicinity?
But really, if he's shaped up his life, mm-hmm. you know, and sort of gotten on a less troublesome track, you really want to say, you know what? I think all of that was false, and you're deluded.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's the approach you want
to
take.
Well, there would be a way to say maybe you had the strength to not be a convenience store robber anymore because you found that within yourself and you don't need to attribute that to anyone else. There would be a tactful way to do that, but I don't see, based on the skeletal outline of an email we have here, any reason to get involved in this at all.
Yeah, I would let bygones be bygones. They have something that's working for them. Just
kidnap the kid and tattoo him with the American Legion symbol so he'll no longer be religious. All right, that's all the time we got for today. Thank you guys very much for listening to Ask an Atheist with Jeremy Whitman this week.